Okay, if you missed the first hour, a lot of Tiger talk to get the show started today. And Scooble, interesting comments last night. Is he really, really is pushing that he wants this team to go for it this year? He wants this team to make a run. He wants the team to add. And, you know, it's in many ways it's applaudable, and in many ways, of course, it's selfish. Like, you know, it's a player that is probably least vested in the Tigers' future. One of the players. I mean, why does he care about future assets? There is a good chance he won't be here. And it, you know, we want our players to want to win. And yet, there's also sort of the, hey, you could also sign here. I mean, you could stay here.
Perhaps stay here.
Can I interest you in a long-term relationship?
But a luxury studio apartment.
So we've been debating whether or not the merits of it, as we get another data point yesterday that they still look like a good team. This stretch of play, it's continued and continued and continued to make this a conversation that is going to probably be the sports story of July in Detroit. Paul behind the glass, who's answering phones today, you are a sell Scooble at all costs kind of guy. Is that a way to describe it?
Yes.
Okay. And so you've heard all this. You've probably been sitting back there pulling your hair out. But you
don't
are not
do that, Paul. That's not advisable.
Actually, I kind of like it, to be honest with you. But anyway,
Paul wears hats anyway, so I guess
that's a good point. Anyway, your thoughts on everything that we've said?
Well, I understand fans wanting to root for their team to do well, and I do think the Tigers are in a position where they can do some things because of how bad the league is, but it is only because of how bad the rest of the American League is. I push back on a little bit about, too, that they have winning records against good teams because they haven't really played the Yankees. They played the faux Yankees until Stanton and Judge are in the lineups against the Tigers. They didn't really beat the Yankees.
Okay. But does that matter when you look at back at May and teams that beat the Tigers, they beat the faux Tigers because the Tigers didn't have Gleyber Torres or Tarek Skubal or Casey Mize for a period of time or all these other players that have been hurt?
Yeah, well, I think those teams just assumed they were beating a bad team because the Tigers were a bad team, and they're still a bad team technically.
The one point you make, I think it's true. I think the American League is weak. But isn't the only thing that's important is how you are relevant to the competition?
Yes, I mean, that is true. I'll say this. The reason I'm a trade Scooble at all costs is because I'm not risking the potential to just do what they've done the last 2 years and getting nothing for Scooble but a comp pick, because fans are going to tell me, oh, well, we got McGonagall with a comp pick, so look how great this is. Most first-round picks in Major League Baseball never see the majors. I'd rather trade Scooble for guys that are at least on the verge of playing in the majors or are already in the majors.
I don't like him, Doug, but I agree with what he says.
In terms of comp pick?
I love Paul.
If anybody says the comp pick is valuable because McGonagall was a comp pick, it's a ridiculous argument.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one. But like Paul, I mean, I think Paul and I both agree on this. I would trade Scooble. I'd trade Scooble, get a haul of prospects in return, and I'd also buy. You can go out there and you've got your own prospects that you can sell off to get, hopefully, at least a bat and at least one exceptional bullpen arm.
So it's funny. I think adding to the roster is like taking your money and putting it in a mutual fund, an investment that you think could pay dividends for you, but there's no guarantees. Selling Scooble and trying to buy feels like you're buying a lottery ticket with your money. You're weakening your team by giving up your best asset and still trying to win. I just can't see how that is a formula that gets them anywhere of substance.
Well, you know, I like to say the phrase giving up the good for the great.
Yeah.
I'd be giving up a chance where this team might be good, mm-hmm. but not great by trading Scooble and getting future assets and moving forward with a plan in the offseason to become great. That's the plan. And because I think the pitching can sustain it, I have to look elsewhere. And then when you're dealing from a position where you're buying, you have to obviously weigh out. Do you think the prospects that you have are going to be better than a player that you're trying to acquire? And I'm not in it to get... If I'm going to be acquiring players, if they're going to be expiring contracts of players, then I don't necessarily want them to, then I don't want a high cost prospect going in return. That's why I brought up like Spencer Steer.
Yeah.
You know, or some of these other players that the Birchie had mentioned, at least Taylor Ward might fit in that category too. Or maybe you don't have to give up a ton to get that player. It's a little bit on the margins, but it's still going to make my team better now because the top part of this roster, the lineup is good. The bottom part, not so much. So how do I bolster is how do I bolster the bottom part? I need guys that are going to go out there and be better than James Outman, Matt Vierling, Zach McKinstry, to a degree, Jake Rogers, obviously Jahmai Jones, and Ben Malgeri. Those are six players on this team, and I need to find a couple players, hopefully, they're going to be better than those guys. Some of those may just come from the farm system. Maybe they go ahead and they give somebody a chance. Max Anderson is better than we thought. Great. That's awesome. But go out and get a Spencer Steer, and all of a sudden he's better than Jake Outman, for instance, or James Outman, for instance. I mean, it can be done, and this team continues to get better.
Also, Scoobal, a lot of balls for Scoobal to be like, did he need to go all in? We need to do something this year. You're not coming back, guy.
Yeah.
Everyone knows you hired Scott Boras to touch free agency and go to the highest bidder. You don't have Scott Boras as an agent if you're looking for hometown discounts and rah-rah, go Tigers. You're gone after the season's over.
It's like I said, it's not hypocritical, but it feels like there's a word to describe it. You don't care about the future assets that they likely give up in a buy. But maybe most major league players also don't. I mean, do you think the guys in the clubhouse are sitting around having this conversation? I really don't want to give up Max Anderson. Do you think the guys at the major league level have those conversations?
Maybe a little bit, but I think more they're more in line talking about what can be done this year.
Yeah.
The guys want to play in the postseason. They want a chance to win. They know if they get in the postseason, you got a shot. Right?
It's also weird. Like, we've been to the postseason here in Detroit with the baseball team the last 2 years, and it feels like it hasn't bolstered people's hope and spirits with this organization. Somehow, some way, they've been a postseason baseball team and undermined the enthusiasm.
And I think it's because how they did it. Like, 2 years ago, they did it with a monster second half. Last year, they had a horrific second half, but because they got off such a great start, mm-hmm. they're able to sustain it. So it's like we haven't seen, and even this year, let's say they do it, it's going to be more along the lines of 2 years ago, we had this monster second half of the season because it was such a bad May. What fans want is what everybody wants to see from their team. Be consistently good. Go wire to wire. Right? That's
everybody wants it to be easy. They want it to be very easy, and it's just
It hasn't been.
Mark in Brighton says, Tigers a playoff team with no bullpen? I say nay, nay. Brad in Chesterfield, Gator, MGF will get disqualified, keep his title, and Omega will win and keep his future title chances.
MJF, not MGF.
I don't know what he wrote. I just deleted it. Sorry. I read it wrong or he wrote it wrong.
Look, it is going to be a big matchup tonight. We're talking the world championship here.
Well, it's huge. And depending on the outcome, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to come to work tomorrow if it doesn't go my way.
Well, I mean, if it doesn't go your way, and what way do you want it to go?
I'm not even sure yet. From Mark on Twitter, Scoobal is right. We need to be buyers, and we should use Scoobal to get hitting assets. Melton Mize and Valdez are our 1-2-3 in the playoffs. Well, that's the thing. We talk about the winning record against the playoff teams, and there is merit to what Paul said and the Yankee team that they beat, but they've only got a losing record against one American League playoff team right now. They also have great starting pitching. And great starting pitching in a short series can really, really carry you. Last night was a game that looked exactly like so many losses when Scoobal handed a 2-1 lead to the bullpen, and the bullpen had to do four innings of work. That is a formula that has produced so many losses this year, and it didn't last night. It didn't. It looked, I guess, how the owner's manual you want it to look. There was a play in baseball last night that was absolutely unbelievable. We will get to that today at 11:16. Plus a tweet from a beat writer near the end of the show yesterday that had us talking about, well, what is next if this is true? We will get to that coming up next segment as well. It's Carson Anderson here on a Wednesday, 248-539-9797. Just a reminder, you can stream the show with the Odyssey app. Get it for your mobile device today. AUDACY. Also stream the show through our website, 971theticket.com, where Evan posts Champ and Chump. And you can find the Birchie Kid story with the Scuba quotes that we've been discussing. 971theticket.com. Stream with video, twitch.tv and youtube.com. We appreciate everybody who watches the program and participates in the streaming chat there. 248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson here on 97.1.
You guys have heard me talking about Shana Roofing for a while now, almost a couple of years here. And I know that sometimes people don't want to believe what I have to say. That's fine. How about taking the word for somebody that's actually gone through the experience and worked with Shana Roofing? Here's what they had to say. A big thanks to Shana Roofing team. Their work and communication that went on during my roofing project was absolutely outstanding. They kept us updated on all aspects of the project, and if I could give 10 stars to this company, I would. The entire team was outstanding. My wife and I can't thank Shayna Roofing enough on such a fantastic job, unmatched reputation. Now, this is the thing. It's testimonials like this that have earned Shayna Roofing a 4.9-star Google rating from thousands of satisfied homeowners. It's a reputation that's earned through decades of doing the job right. The no-pressure promise that they have, which forgets all about the high-pressure sales pitches, you don't want any of that. Instead, what you get is a true, honest assessment of what your home actually needs. They go up into the attic. They get up on the roof. They assess everything beforehand and let you know if you need a simple repair or if you need a complete teardown. Over 30 years of trusted service, it's a proven track record serving Michigan homeowners. Get your quote today from Shayna Roofing by visiting mymichiganroof.com. Remember the name, Shayna Roofing Windows and Siding. It's a name that Michigan trusts. Go to mymichiganroof.com.
Okay, there was a play last night in Major League Baseball, often referred to as a little league home run, which is essentially a ball gets put in play and there's a comedy of errors in the field and a player never stops running and ends up back at home plate. It is not technically a home run, but in, you know,
it's a little league home.
Anybody who has had kids that have played baseball at a lower level, you know, when they're young, you've seen this.
That's why I led my team in triples.
Is it in quotes, triples,
triples. I never stopped running.
Okay.
Until I got to third base. Well, and when kids are like, the coach is like, you can't go any further.
You know, at 9 and 10 years old, one of the most dangerous plays for a fielding team is anytime you have to throw the ball.
Yeah.
And like it is always a risky proposition. But last night, in the bottom of the first, the Royals were playing the Mets. The Mets were up. They had runners at first and second with two outs. And, Carson Bengi was up for the Mets, and he hits a slow roller in the infield towards third base. It gets picked up by the pitcher, who was Seth Lugo, and he tries to wheel and fire it to first. And he throws low, and the ball gets away and into foul territory down the right field line. The first baseman, Jack Caglione, goes and retrieves it. And then makes maybe the single worst throw I've ever seen by a major leaguer. He picks it up and with great conviction fires a ball that splits home plate and third base perfectly. Like he throws it.
Bisects it.
Like right halfway up the line between home and third. And overthrows everyone and it like hits the facing of the dugout and rolls back towards third base.
Like, I'm going to throw it between home and third. Why don't you figure out which is the better way? Should I make the play and come and get the ball and go to third base? Or should I catch the ball and run back to home? Perfectly in between.
It is such, it's one of those, did you mean to do that? What were you, I don't know what, I mean, obviously he didn't mean to throw it away, but the way he picks it up and fires it, it looks like he was trying to perfectly like dissect the middle point between home and third. So it bounces around in foul territory. Another run scores. It gets picked up by the third baseman then, Nick Lofton, who fires it home to try and get the runner who is trying to score from first. Okay? And he throws it away. Another run scores. The third throwing error of the play. And what happens? Bengi, the hitter, rounds third and scores. So three throwing errors by the Royals in one play. And my single favorite part of this entire play is that after the third error, the play ends, and this is a fact, with the right fielder holding the ball in foul territory between home and first. The right fielder, Tyler Tolbert, had come running in to retrieve the first wild throw and kind of kept wandering towards the infield. And on the final wild throw, he ends up holding the baseball in foul territory between home and first. I've never seen anything like it. It is hysterical. It's been tweeted out At Dungator 971 if you want to see it.
To be fair, you've never seen anything like that in Major League Baseball.
In Major League Baseball, yeah. Have I ever seen in Little League Baseball?
You've seen it a million times in Little League.
That a right fielder ends up holding the ball between home and first? I might have, actually.
You've seen the ball thrown around like
I've seen the ball thrown around like this a ton, but it is absolutely hysterical. And the throws, the wild throws, are one thing. I can't get over that the play ended with the right fielder holding the ball in foul territory between home and first.
And you tweeted this out?
It's been tweeted from our Twitter account, at Dungator971. Okay.
Have you seen the video that I tweeted out?
I have not.
Like recently, like a half an hour ago or so.
A cat stopping PKs?
That's right.
Okay. You are World Cup Scott, man.
Listen.
You are World Cup Scott.
That cat should be signed.
You are. You can see that.
You're not getting it past that cat.
No. The cat saving PKs with a mini soccer ball in front of a mini goal.
Save after save after save.
This is one hell of a goalie, this cat. All right, near the end of the show yesterday, a beat writer tweeted out something that I found fascinating. Helene St. James, covers the Red Wings, tweeted out, in 2+ months since requesting a trade from the Red Wings, Dylan Larkin has not expanded his list from Florida, Minnesota, Vegas. No offers from those teams have intrigued the Wings. They want value now players for a 1C with a favorable contract. I could closely, that's it. I started reading something else there, my bad. But he hasn't expanded his no trade list. Really? I think we're about to find out how much Dylan Larkin really wants to get traded.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like he's in a way, has already screwed the Red Wings, first of all, by saying he wants to be traded. Second of all, if you only gave him the 3-team list days before the draft, that doesn't help their standing there. So that's a missed opportunity. And if you still haven't, now it just seems a little spiteful. If you're Dylan Larkin, he's losing a lot of any. There are fans out there to absolutely support him, right? Mm-hmm. I don't blame you for wanting out. This team's awful. You don't like the direction that things are going with Steve Yzerman. Hasn't done anything to fix this problem. And yeah, get out of there. Good job, Dylan. Good job. You still feeling that way about Dylan Larkin? Because he's handcuffing the team in what they can do. Because he's got his no trade clause and he's the one who asked for the trade in the first place, which I can't help but go back to Joe Shad commenting on the NHL, which is odd because he's an NFL guy, but Joe Shad who comments and says, you know, if you ask for a trade and you have a no trade clause, you should have to waive your no trade clause because you're the one that's asking for it. The point of getting the no trade clause is so that when a team comes to you and says, hey, we're going to move you, you say, well, hold on. I got the clause in my contract. You're going to move me. It's to these teams. But when you're the one asking for the trade, you shouldn't have this much power.
Well, we would lose this. What you said and what Joe Shad said sort of makes sense. I hear where he's coming from. You would also lose this argument in a court of law.
Of course. Yes. And I get it. I totally understand it. But it's like you don't see this situation happening where the guy with the no trade clause is the one who's asking for the trade. At least it doesn't get out in public like that. Maybe that things like that have happened with other players and they just did it quietly. But this is anything but quiet for the Red Wings. And yes, it is really difficult to make a trade at this point with only 3 teams. Like the only way these teams are going to be able to get it done is if they find a third team. I actually do think that Florida could do something, but I don't think Florida is willing to do what it takes. Minnesota could, but there's no way they're going to give up Boldy. And that's what it would take. But they're not going to do that. The whole point of adding Dylan Larkin to their team is to add Dylan Larkin to the team. They don't have the prospects to give up. And Yzerman doesn't want prospects in return. Yzerman wants players. And I totally get that. In Vegas, they don't have anything left to deal, really, at this point either. So the team's going to have to find a third team that's willing to give up their assets to appease the Red Wings. And somehow they get appeased as well because you got to find another team. He has to add to his list. He just has to.
What's amazing to me is that he hasn't already. Like as we sit here, there had been rumors and reports that there are other teams added to the list. And apparently all that was wrong. I mean, right? If he hasn't expanded his list, he doesn't feel, that doesn't feel to me like he could possibly want out as desperately as someone who would, you would think would ask for a trade would desperately want out.
Yeah. And maybe, I mean, look, this isn't, I don't think this is the case, right? But if you're trying to find reasons why he's being stubborn with this whole thing and not trying to hang on to it, is it at all possible? Do you give a less than 10% chance or greater, if you feel that way, that he is trying to force Steve Yzerman to make moves for this team to see if he wants to come back? So when the team adds Arvidsson, who is a top six forward, when the team adds Kolasar, who's going to be a bottom six forward, but I think really helps to change the team in a direction that all fans want to see this team go and get tougher. When they make moves like that, when they've added some extra depth, whether it's to the defensive core or if it's going to be in Grand Rapids, but they've made these two pretty significant moves to this team right now. Is he sitting back and going, okay, they're going in the right direction. Now, are you willing to go a little further? Say Wataneo. Can you go a little further and add a significant piece to this puzzle where Dylan Larkin goes, yeah, this is a team I want to play for. And is that at all possible that he's waiting to see what the team does before he expands his list or he comes back to the team and says, I want to play for this team?
It's a fascinating saga that's playing out in front of us. And look, the emotions of fans, like it, feels like we're being toyed with a little bit, but of course this is just the business of the off season. And you know, there's always discussions of moves that get, that don't get made that we never hear about. The fact that we heard about this one and now we're sitting on it a couple of months. I don't know how this is going to end. If Larkin never moves, and I feel like the teams that have been mentioned have probably vetted out, can we get a third team involved? You know, what would make them compel them to not make that call until July 8th and then suddenly go, all right, let's try and get a third team involved. I would have to think that they've all tried to get a third team involved. And knowing that and knowing that nothing has happened yet, it feels to me like I'm getting close to 70% that Larkin's coming back.
Wow, that's a big percentage. I think there are a couple things that are really interesting about this scenario, what's how it's playing out. The first is that Dylan Larkin hasn't said a word. Nobody has heard a word from Dylan Larkin's camp. I wouldn't expect Yzerman to say much. He didn't say much. He had to address it because he was forced to, but even put people off and they look, this is all I'm going to say. That's how he kind of prefaced thing. The other thing I find interesting is that none of his teammates have said anything. You're not seeing any quotes from anybody. There's no Alex DeBrincat quotes, and people now want to know, is Alex DeBrincat on the trading block? He's not saying anything. You know, Patrick Kane has only said that he'd consider coming back to the Red Wings, but he hasn't signed with anybody yet. He hasn't signed with the Wings yet either. I think he's sitting back, and he can take all the time in the world because he can pick and choose where he wants to go. But nobody else is. Lucas Raymond, Mo Sider, nobody else has said anything about this situation. You know, is the whole team in hiding right now?
The most disappointing or depressing part about this is I really just wish I had faith in Yzerman doing something good here. I really wish that I'd have more faith in Brad Holmes, like being in a tough spot to try and get out of it. And we've seen teams do it. Like Joe Dumars did it with Grant Hill.
Yeah.
And Brad Holmes did it with Matthew Stafford, where an important player asked for a trade and they actually bolstered. They came out of it in the case of the Pistons. They came out of it better and won a championship that was kickstarted a championship. Brad Holmes, it's been the foundation between Goff and everything they got back of a team. It worked for L.A. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it didn't, but it's actually Detroit's had their better teams in the last few years than they ever had under Stafford. And so now, as we sit here, I wish I had faith in Yzerman doing this.
Well, yeah, that's your wish. My wish is that we never heard about this in the first place, that if they were going to trade Dylan Larkin, that it was done without anybody knowing that Dylan asked for the trade. And they just, hey, here it is. July 14th, and they make a trade. Like, whoa, Dylan Larkin just got traded. I can't believe it.
And then you find out. Well, yeah, that's what happened with Stafford, right? When they traded Stafford, we didn't find out till later. 248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson. We got open lines here on 97.1. Lots on the table today. We talked a little Red Wings with that Helaine St. James tweet yesterday. He said, no, the list of three teams, that's it. It has not expanded. Does Dylan Larkin really want to get traded? I don't know. I'm increasingly feeling like Larkin's going to be back. There's just, and I'm not, I'm mad at Yzerman for being in this predicament in the first place. I'm not mad at Yzerman if he doesn't trade Larkin because he's looking out for the best interest of the Red Wings. And, if you don't get an offer that is, you're happy with, don't, as was said by Elliot Freeman 2 days ago, and we played it on the air at the time, no trade is better than a bad trade. Now, am I mad at Yzerman for being in this jam in the first place? Of course, but, and then somehow hoping that he turns it around, but it just, I don't have a lot of faith in that. With that said, we spent a lot of time talking about the Scooble comments last night. Interesting words saying he wants to add, and it feels a little bit hypocritical for a guy that isn't willing to make a long-term commitment to the organization, and he's trying to get the organization to do something that might impact it long-term. But I can't be mad at him for wanting to win. Hell, I mean, if they add something and they go out and they make a serious run at the American League, that feels like something we'd all be in favor of. Although some people aren't. Like, some people want them to sell and still do, in spite of the way they played the last month and a half. And the scars from May run deep. There is no doubt about it.
They do. But if you go back and look at May and you recognize that of Scooble, Mize, and Melton, those three starting pitchers made a total of five starts the entire month of May. Those three. With no Scooble starts, by the way. And the five starts you got were outstanding by both pitchers. The last one happened to be cut short four innings for Casey Mize before he got hurt and missed the next couple weeks. The entire month of May, they played basically without Gleyber Torres, except for a couple of games. So you're talking about major players that weren't available to them and big-time contributors, obviously. Should they have gone as bad as they did? Of course not. But, I mean, I'm not saying this team would have won 20 out of 30 games that month either, but it sure would have been a hell of a lot better than the four or six games that they won.
Let's get back to your open line calls. We go to Mark in Detroit is next. Hello, Mark.
Okay. Hey, what's up with you? I look at the Pistons. People look at what they did. Okay, they haven't did nothing major, but I look at the roster. I mean, OKC win because they got four players that's shooting 40% now from three. I think Gary Harris, I think he's going to be stretched and weighed. But Torian Prince, they can play him at backup power forward. He's a 40% three-point shooter. And they had to free up some more money for Durham because I think Durham is going to want at least $40 million. So, but I still think there's one more move coming. So what about DeMar DeRozan? And how much money do we actually have to spend on the – I think we got $7 or $8 million left after we give them $40 million.
I think – it depends what they're going to give Jalen Duren.
Yeah.
But it's like $45 million, I think, that they have right now before
luxury
tax. They
got an exception as well. I mean, DeMar DeRozan can score. He would not be the shooter that – but if you're right about the shooting. If you look at the major players that they have added, and I'm not sure I'd include Gary Harris in that group at this point in his career, but John Collins – he can shoot it. Isaiah Joe, he can shoot it. Torian Prince, he can shoot it. They haven't moved on from Duncan Robinson yet.
Yeah.
So they've got, it's like we're going to have the same core three that they believe in, and we're going to add a lot more shooting around them, appears to be the offseason plan so far.
Right. They were 29th in shooting. If they could shoot the ball, they would have beat the Cleveland. But I still think they need to go out and get one more playmaker. And I still think there's one more move because they got 16 players under contract. Gary Harris is going to be moved. That's going to get them 15. But with Durham, it's going to be 16. So has Duncan Robinson, have they accepted his option or what? I haven't heard nothing about that.
I mean, as far as I know, Duncan Robinson is going to be back at this point. I mean, it's a fascinating question that is on the to-do list today, and I guess you've kind of sparked the conversation. What do you think Trajan is going to do next? Seriously, national writers, Kevin O'Connor from Yahoo, what's next for the Pistons? Got to be something bigger brewing. He tweeted that today. Jack Weinbach, an NBA writer, he thinks they're after somebody. that we will get to in a minute. But you start thinking about, what do you think it is? Because they have another move to be made. Like, I was talking to Evan. Evan and Stoney do the Restore the Floor Piston podcast here at 97.1. So, you know, covers this team on a regular basis, talks about it on a regular basis. And I asked Evan that question today. I said, what do you think they're up to? And you know what he said? It was interesting. He said, I think they're getting Dern back, and that's it. And I think the money that they have left over, and this is the least exciting thing in the world in terms of the offseason, is going to be taken to the trade deadline. And I'm not sure that isn't the smartest thing you can do, because now you are playing. You are have an opportunity in NBA games to assess and then address what whatever issues you have that you see developing with a new cast of characters around the core. You will have a chance to see your upgrades, and I put in quotes, your upgrades in action, and figure out what you're lacking. And you, instead of doing it now and trying to add something now, you are going to take it for a test drive first. And I'm not convinced that that's not the smartest thing for them to do.
No, I understand what you're saying. It would be underwhelming as a fan, because we want more. We've been, you know, just 2 weeks ago, we were talking about crazy pipe dreams of adding wild players to the mix, including Jaylen Brown to LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then it shifted to Trey Murphy, and now it's well, they just traded for Taurean Prince and Gary Harris.
Prince might help them.
Might. I mean, you know, both players have passed their prime. They're north of 30, I believe. But they can shoot, but none of them are going to be counted on to play like 25 minutes a game, I can't imagine. But it does look like they've got, I mean, a little bit better. Is Taurean Prince going to be better for you than Caris LeVert?
Well, I mean, he's going to shoot it better.
So that's what you're asking yourself. They still don't have the ball handlers, part of the ball handlers and shooters that Trajan Langdon talked about. But
yeah,
maybe they have that with a Corey, the draft pick. Or maybe, like you said, there's something still to come down. I think another thing why it could be wise, it's not sexy, but come trade deadline next year, it might be awesome. Too, because now you've got the money saved up and you can go and get that player, whoever you want. But the other thing it does, it allows you more time to see what you have also in-house. Like, is Danis Jenkins taking a big step? More importantly, you know, are you looking at Ronnie Holland and taking a big step forward?
Ronnie.
You know, I just call him Ronnie.
I've never heard him referred to as Ronnie.
We're boys. No, I mean, is Ron Holland going to take a big step forward? Is Asar Thompson going to take a big step forward offensively? And how about Jalen Duren? You know, is he expanding his game beyond the world of lobs and tip and dunks?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot to look at to see over 50 games going into the trade deadline, and to have that money freed up, it might be prudent to do it. It's not fun right now for all of us, because we want it now. We want the Trey Murphy trade. But the other thing that opens up is that other players become available that aren't available right now. Teams are going to be jockeying for position. They're going to see, you know what, we don't have a chance. We're sellers. And we've got players to sell, and the Pistons have parts, and they have all the draft picks still. They have the aforementioned younger players that teams might be interested as well. So maybe it is prudent to hang on to that.
248-539-9797. It's a fascinating scenario that's played out. First of all, I mean, Duren and the Pistons are in this staring contest. See who blinks first. The Pistons, everybody is speculating what they're going to do. And one writer threw out a young player that he thinks they might be chasing. We will get to that today at 11:46. It's Carson Anderson, open lines, 97.1. All right, it's Carson Anderson here on 97.1 Open Lines, 248-539-9797. Lots to talk about here on this this Wednesday, including Tiger and Red Wing talk, and we just had a caller bring up the Pistons, and we're trying to figure out what is next. And quite frankly, there's a lot of people around the league wondering what is next, because there's some war chesting going on by Trajan, and all is quiet on the Trajan front. And yet, there appears, you know, there's speculation about Kevin Durant, Brian Windhorst lobbing LeBron James' name to Detroit. There has been trade talk. with Trey Murphy, and that feels like it has legs, and then it doesn't. There's been discussion of Michael Porter Jr., mostly fan driven. There was the Tyler Hero thing that was out there, and now Jake Weinbach, NBA writer, says Detroit appears to be preparing for a larger move in addition to resolving Jalen Duren's restricted free agent. I would closely monitor the Pistons as a potential suitor for Peyton Watson, fourth-year player, Denver, restricted free agent, an emerging player who has been more and more productive as his years have gone on. Interesting.
He took a big leap this past season. Fourth year in the league, he has gotten better in every category, seemingly every season. Starting in scoring, came into the league, didn't play much, 3 points a game, then jumped up to 7 points, then to 8 points. And last year, 14.6. Mm-hmm. That's significant. It comes with a significant hike in the number of shots he takes per game. Last year it was 6.3, and this past season it was 10.8 shots per game. He's knocked down 41% of his three-pointers last year on 3.6 attempts per game. So it's not a terribly small sample size. 73% from the free throw line, you like that. 5 rebounds, you like that. I like the 1.1 blocks and almost a steal per game. Those two numbers defensively tells me he can be responsible a little bit there too. I mean, I don't know what the cost is, but it seems like this would be a nice player. Another one along the margins. This isn't
the
no. Big.
I mean, the question is this along the margins, or is this trying to get on board a player that his career arc was like Chris Middleton, who like slowly blossomed into an important player on a championship team? And I'm intrigued by this. Arrow seems to be pointing up. Denver has made it a priority to bring him back. But could that be the move that Trajan is war chesting? This an offer for this restricted free agent?
Could be. I also have questions about his health. The last 2 years, he's played 68 games and 54 games respectively.
Did he play in the playoffs? I'm not sure if he played in the playoffs.
I don't think he played in the playoffs this year.
I have to look that up. Anyway, that feels like a move.
He did not.
Feels like a move that, yeah, it could potentially make them better, could potentially be getting on board a player who's coming into his own at just the right time.
In the Big Ten zone.
Okay. It's obviously going to be, when you say that, a Pac-12 team. And
it's a Big Ten team.
It's going to be a former Pac-12 team. And I'm going to say not USC because it's basketball, probably not Washington. So Oregon or UCLA. Then I'll go Oregon.
You chose poorly.
Did I?
UCLA.
Okay. There you go. Anyway.
No, but it sounds like there's something there. Young player. He's only 23. Like I said, he's gotten better every season statistically. Mm-hmm. And then took a big jump. So maybe it is somebody that develops. I mean, he played 29 minutes a game last year.
All right. Let's get to some feedback. If you want to keep talking Pistons, 248-539-9797. Only way the Tigers should go all in with Scoobal is if he re-signs with them before the deadline.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Okay, would you put it at 0.0?
Did he re-sign before?
Yeah, there's no chance. Not even...
Before what? The trade deadline,
yeah.
I put it at 0.0.
Okay. I don't. But I don't think it's likely.
If you ripped your heart out of your chest...
Okay.
And focused only on your brain. You think there is any sliver of a chance?
I think I know I would be thinking about the new CBA. I'd be thinking a lot about the new CBA if it were me. But I mean, look, that doesn't seem to bother him. I believe Scoobal is the Tiger player representative, so he's probably well aware of the talks and what's going on more than most, but I would be considering
that. May not be an insignificant fact.
It might not be. No, the Tigers team has become fun to watch. They're playing exciting baseball. And Dirk said last night, it's time for the bullpen to go on a roll. That's from Christian. Well, so that's an interesting theory. I mean, cause pitchers can correct too. Right. The way we talked about hitters like Cole Keith. Remember Cole Keith went basically the first like 85 games without a home run. And now he's got seven in the last five.
Yeah.
It's not that much, but
he's got all his home runs in the last
couple weeks.
Few weeks.
Yeah. So can pitchers correct? Are the bullpen arms going to correct? and suddenly, you know, bring all their numbers down, because in the end, that's what happens, is nobody goes out there and gives up 1.23 runs per game per outing. They do it over the course of time, right?
Well, there's a correction. To get an average. There's a correction, and the correction happens when you go way the other end, the other polar opposite. And then there's the, where do you end up settling it? What are you really? You know, are you, there's Jekyll, there's Hyde, and there's in between. So what is Kenley Jansen really at this point in his career? I mean, he might be done because it's this point in his career. It feels like it should be different with Will Vest because he's younger, but I don't know.
Yeah.
So the other guys feel like they're the guys that took chances on.
Sure.
Or they're just younger players and we don't really know, and it's going to be a mystery. That's why I think you need to go out and get bullpen arms that have a track record that you can trust.
This Tiger team isn't winning the World Series, so I don't know why this is even a debate. Trade him. That's from American Mason. Well, it's a debate because they might keep playing well. They might make themselves a more obvious playoff team before the deadline. And as constructed, probably not winning the World Series. I would completely agree with you. But if they do justify a bye, can they do something that makes them look like a more formidable threat in a weak American League?
I mean,
so Eric, that's why it's a debate, because they keep winning.
Yeah. And it's, how do they look right now? Do they look like a team that is pathetic? No. Do they look like a team that's not a playoff team, if you judge them by the last 4 or 5 weeks of baseball, really since June 1st? This is what, the best team in the American League since then?
Yep.
Is this more along the lines of what they are? And I think it tracks with, it's closer to that. I don't think they're the best team in the American League. But I did think this was the best team in the American League Central, and now they're playing like it, right? I mean, is anybody going to be surprised if Chicago starts to falter, the White Sox, because, okay, is it too much too soon for them, or are they legitimately going to be a good team? They don't have the pitching. You look at Cleveland. Cleveland has the Tigers' number. They've won all 6 games so far, which is crazy. But Cleveland's lineup is nothing to write home about. I think like the Tigers have the best roster of these 3 teams.
Well, and they finally started to act like it.
Yes.
And but they have to act like it for a long time in an emphatic way to make, as I think it was Mark said, I don't know why it's a debate. That's what makes it a debate, is if they could do that.
You go back and you think about Riley Green, who had 36 home runs last year or something like that. He's got 13 now, but it wasn't that long ago that he had like 4. He started to heat up. He's gotten better. Dylan Dingler's emerging as this all-star catcher, and it doesn't look like a McKinstry fluke from last year. It looks like he actually belongs. So they've got some pieces here that are starting to live up to what we expected out of them. And what I expected out of this team was a team that was going to threaten 90 wins. I don't think they are, but I think they're a better than 500 team.
248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson. Get back to what Scooble said last night after the game, next on 97.1.